What's up, guys? Welcome to this very special episode of the Sat Signal. Today, I am joined by an awesome Aussie Bitcoiner, Matt Fraser from the Crypto Collective, who specializes in helping Aussies get their Bitcoin, get Bitcoin into their superannuation. But we also had a really interesting chat about his journey into Bitcoin, how he went from being an eight-figure e-com seller doing over $70 million in sales of his products online. How did he get into Bitcoin? Why did he tumble down that particular rabbit hole? And why is it that today he's selling everything that's not nailed down, his car collection, his commercial real estate, everything to go and dematerialize his life into Bitcoin? It's a really interesting discussion. We also talked about something really interesting, which you'll have to wait for the second half of the pod, which was Bitcoin mining and how Matthew is mining KYC free Bitcoin. Now, not free Bitcoin, but free of KYC, so that it's completely private Bitcoin, virgin minted for the first time and put into his wallet every single day anonymously without any prior transactions. It's a really interesting discussion. We talked about the power of the Bitcoin network, what node distribution means and why we both operate our own Bitcoin nodes, and so much more. This is a really interesting one, bit different to what we normally cover. Lots of technical detail and super relevant to all Bitcoiners, no matter where you are. Thanks for watching. Remember, the best thing you can do for me if you like this content is to subscribe to the channel. Only about 70 or 65% of you are subscribed. So hit that subscribe button and drop a comment to engage in the discussion. Thanks for watching. Let's get on with it. Matt, welcome to the show, mate. It has been long overdue. Love to talk to another Aussie Bitcoiner. How you doing?
Hey, good, Adam. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
So where are you joining us from, mate? Whereabouts in the country are you?
Well, I'm in northern New South Wales, just south of the Gold Coast for any international watchers. It's a beautiful part of Australia. I would say the best part of Australia. And in fact, a lot of people are moving up from Melbourne, which has turned into a bit of a shithole, and moving to the Gold Coast area.
There you go. So for those of you who don't know Matt, I've known Matt, we were just talking before we rolled tape. It's been nearly a decade now since we've known each other. We both sort of have been on similar trajectories in some respects. We both got into e-com. You did really well. You built an eight-figure e-com brand that blew up through COVID. And now you're full orange peeled. There's a lot of orange. For some of the listeners, I got to say it, orange peeled, as P-I-L-L-E-D, because I've had quite a few messages, people saying, Adam, I'm now orange peeled. As in, and I love it, but it's orange peeled. But you're now fully into the Bitcoin rabbit hole. And I'm going to talk a bit about what you do, but maybe you could tell us, like, let's start off with, like, what was it that tripped you over and tumbling down that rabbit hole? Because you were, you still are a successful entrepreneur, but you've really moved heavily, as you can see in the background. You've got the Bitcoin price behind you, you've got the Bitcoin logo. You're
not
really
just the hat, Bitcoin. Not just the logo.
Yeah, like you're all in. So what took you down that rabbit hole? Why have you gone so heavily into Bitcoin as an Aussie entrepreneur?
Yeah, well, let me say from the outset, because a lot of people, Adam, don't know much about Bitcoin. And I used to know about Bitcoin last decade and was an absolute skeptic. I was on record saying to people, that's crazy. You would never buy that. Don't do it. You're going to lose all your money, right? And I was ingrained into property. That's what I grew up with. And I had built a small property portfolio in my early 20s. And that was the thing to do. And I went through a period where my wife and I own a Hungry Jack's restaurant. That went through some tough times. We then found Amazon. And of course, that set the world on fire. And it was once I'd made the money in Amazon, I was then thinking, where can I deploy my capital? And I'm talking, you know, I've done over $70 million in online sales in the last few years. So it was a chunk of change. Initially, I was diversifying, right? I was like staying in the property world. And then I started to go down this Bitcoin rabbit hole. And I don't remember I do. It was a good friend of ours, Martin Keane. I'm going to give a shout out to Martin, who no doubt will be watching this. From the UK, he started talking about Bitcoin again. And I thought, gee, there might be something to this. I better go and investigate it. a bit more because I was so stuck in my own mindset of it has to be property. So I'd already started shelling out this money for property. I then, because I had such great success with getting mentored, i.e. from yourself for Amazon, I went and shelled out another $20,000 in mentoring from someone who was already in the crypto space so that I could learn from them and hopefully not make much mis not make too many mistakes, although I have bought some shit coins in my time. And so that's how I got into the Bitcoin space. And I haven't actually been in the Bitcoin space for like decades. It was only like 2022. It was after the previous high. And the first time I bought, I think, Adam, it was about 60,000. It might have even been Australian dollars. And then as soon as I bought, it went down. And then I bought again and it went down again. But by this stage, I had the training from somebody else. I was reading, obviously, books and learning more about the space. I was getting pretty convicted in the space, right? And as you know, you've got to have conviction in the asset. Otherwise, when the prices drop, people freak out. All the way down in 2022, as it was going down, I was buying more. All the way through 2023, when it hit 16,000 USD, I was buying, right? And there was people at that time saying to me, including someone we know, who said, "I'm going to wait for it to get to $10,000. I'm not buying now. It could go down even more." And I was like, "Listen, I think you should just buy a little bit. You're like, what if it doesn't go down?" Anyway, so that was how I got into the space, and now it's turned into an absolute passion of mine. I would dare say an obsession. It's not just the Bitcoin hat and the number plates, Adam, which are HODL, right? It's not just those. I've really turned my whole life to dedicate this time now. And in turn, of course, you've got their Crypto Collective. Crypto Collective is now an online community of over 700 people that I help transition their superannuation into SMSF and allocate to Bitcoin. Because even through my own journey, I've now moved all of my superannuation into Bitcoin. And so that's what I now do, and I absolutely love it.
So that's really interesting. What I'd like to, well, first of all, congrats on buying all the way to the bottom, because it's one thing to buy at the top and just be taken to the bottom and then just sit there and wait. But you actually like doubled down like through and kept buying when all the basically evidence from day one to the bottom was negative. It was just down, 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 down. That's really interesting. So I just want to ask you, what enabled you to keep buying all the way down, apart from having the money and the cash flow, but what was going on in your head? What were you doing to feed your mind that made you continue to back a loser?
And there was a lot of people out there too, Adam, saying, "This is going to go to zero. Bitcoin is finished," right? This seems to happen every cycle. But I just kept buying. And when it went down, I thought, "It's cheaper. I can get Bitcoin out at a cheaper price, so I'm going to buy more." And as my business is also generating good cash flow, I was like, "Well, I need to park it somewhere as well." I also had the foresight, I guess, of looking back in history. We already had, I think at that time, maybe 13 odd years or something of history of Bitcoin to show that when there is a dip, it always comes back again. And I think the other thing too was I was listening to really quality people in the space who were saying, "Look, this it's not going to zero," and I guess they were giving me the confidence to also continue to buy. And so I think I want to make this one point. If you've got someone who's been in this business for years and years, like yourself, who can put you at ease while it's going down, that also helps. And if you say, "Matt, it's going to turn around. Now's a great time to buy," and if you've got a mentor like that in you on your side, then it's definitely going to help.
For the newbies in the space, we call this DCA. It means dollar cost average. Had Matt just bought at whatever it was, he'd made his first purchase and then waited, and that's the only Bitcoin he bought, that would be his average cost because he made one purchase at, let's say, 50 or 60,000 Australian dollars. But because he bought all the way down, he bought down in the process because he dollar cost averaged through the lows. His average cost is much lower than that, which is why he's done so well now. And, you know, I'm like you, Matt. I fed my brain through it as well because I lost a lot of money through that last drawdown. I went all the way to 15,000. And every day I was doing stairs for exercise at that time in my building. And there's an internal staircase, 7 floors where I lived. And I used to go up and down, up and down, up and down every morning, just stair climbing. and I'd listen to Michael Saylor and I'd listen to Jeff Booth, and it was just over and over and over, and I just kept feeding my head an hour a day of just belief. And it was very, very powerful. And at the end of one of the Bitcoin summits in Vegas, when Saylor spoke, when he finished his talk, the last thing he said was, "Do not sell your Bitcoin." And it was during the bear. And when I met him a few months ago in Prague, I said, "Michael, thank you so much, because it was you that kept me going through those bear markets, and I really appreciate it." It was a very nice moment. So
Can I
what I
say
want to,
something
yeah, go
just
ahead.
on that, Adam? I mean, you've got other people out there who have not been in the Bitcoin space, who don't own Bitcoin at all, who are telling you not to buy Bitcoin. Yet you've got someone like Michael Saylor and Jeff Booth, who are, I mean, you know the credentials of Michael Saylor. He's basically a rocket scientist. He's now calling for the trajectory of Bitcoin and the power of Bitcoin, et cetera, et cetera. Who are you going to listen to? The guy on the street who's like driving around in his freaking Kingswood, or Michael Saylor and Jeff Booth?
Well, that, I mean, it's a constant frustration as a Bitcoiner, is that, like your broke uncle or your poor grandmother or whatever, people take this advice. And I'm like, you literally have like the biggest institutions in the world, the White House, these incredible investors that are billionaires, all saying the same thing, but you're right and they're all wrong. It's just such a common recurring theme, because people don't want information, they want confirmation that their position of zero Bitcoin is the right choice, and so they stay there. But let's talk, Matthew, about like the transition of you as a Bitcoiner, because obviously I assume it's true for you. When I started, it was like I bought Bitcoin because I thought it was an investment and I would make money, and that was what's great. But you don't like get to be like what you are, which is now a Bitcoin maxi, somebody who just lives, breathes Bitcoin only. What is it? How would you describe what it is that has made you a fanatic about Bitcoin? What is it like that's really
Look,
brought you to there?
yeah, I think, look, there's so many people in the space. I've learned more about money, the monetary system, the broken money. Lynn Aldrin, for example, reading up on Lynn. You've got Jeff Booth as well. I listen to a lot of Michael Saylor. I've also, James from Invest Answers is also a good source of information. I've listened to him a lot. And as I've gone down this rabbit hole, you start to compare. For example, I'm looking at my superannuation. It's getting, let's say, 9, 10% at best on average. Okay. I'm comparing that against the power of Bitcoin, which over the last 5 years has done about 50 plus percent on average. Right. And I'm thinking, why am I keeping my money in this rubbish superannuation fund, which actually goes to prop up mostly the unions, which then props up the Labor Party in this country? Which don't get me started on that, Adam, and the taxes and the control that they're bringing to this country. And I'm like, so that's where I start to look at the differences. Let's move all my superannuation into an SMSF. I take control of it and I allocate it all to Bitcoin. So that's part of it. And then you start moving more into the politics of it all, and why are the governments printing so much money? How come they're debasing our currency? You know that only a few short years ago, when you went to the grocery store, you could basically fill up your half your cart for $100. Now you're looking at your cart, you've got four items in there for $100, right? That's not because so much the cost of goods has so much gone up, it's because of currency debasement and the system that we live in, which is a forever-ending cycle of money printing. That's all it is happening. So then you start to get kind of mad, actually, a little bit disillusioned with everything. And I guess that also helped me to want to help other people, because once you see, you can't unsee it. And so in that, you start talking to other people. Hey, do you own Bitcoin? No, I don't own Bitcoin. Why not? Okay. And then it becomes this battle of, why are you keeping your money in Australian dollars? Adam, I had a mechanic come to my I've got a car collection, which I'm currently I've got two more to sell off. They're going to more Bitcoin. I've had them, they're fun, they're going. The car mechanic comes in. I get talking to him about, he's looking at the shed and the cars and everything, and he sees the Bitcoin hat and he's like, what do you do? I'm like, Bitcoin, dude. He tells me he's got $300,000 of cash sitting in the bank. Can you believe this? And he's not the first person I've met in recent times that's got large sums of just cash sitting in the bank. I said, "What are you doing with that money?" "Well, I'm waiting for the property market. We missed the property market a few years ago, but I'm saving up a bit more." I'm like, "Dude, do you realize that that is just draining it probably between 15 to 10% a year? It's eroding away." And I showed him some things about Bitcoin. I don't know if it went straight over his head, but I wanted to just show him, and I guess the fact that your purchasing power today is much less than it was yesterday, and into the future is going to be even less. So you have to, because of the system that we live in, move your money to a hard asset. And the hard asset, of course, is, as we know, is the most pristine asset, which is Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's really hard for people to get their head around the concept of debasement, I've found, right? Like they look in their bank and they see $300,000 in this guy's case. And when you say it's deflating away, they're like, but they don't see it because the number on the screen changes. And you're like, dude, you're not going to see it in the bank. You're going to see it in the trolley. You're going to
That's
see
right.
less in the trolley. You're going to see, you're going to see prices go up. I saw a comment on one of our YouTube videos the other day, and the guy says, "Mate, I don't need bloody Bitcoin or any crypto crap. I need the prices to go down." And I said, like, "No, but I mean, you feel the guy's pain." And I'm like, "Brother,
Yes.
what you have to understand is that if you price the world in Bitcoin, the prices are going down. Like, there's a currency sitting there that is making the world cheaper for anybody who saves in it. As long as they can stomach some volatility in the short term, everything in the world gets cheaper on Bitcoin because there is no debasement, meaning there is no more Bitcoin being printed into the system. And when governments are printing more into the system, it creates the need for more cash to buy the same amount of goods and services in the system. So it's very hard for people to get their head around it. But if you're struggling with this, guys, stick to it and keep learning and keep watching these videos. Even if you're walking up and down a staircase inside of a building somewhere right now and you still don't quite get it, if you just keep listening, one day, sooner or later, the penny will drop. And it's not because you're silly. It's not because you're dumb. It's because you were born into a system and it's the only system you know. And it can take a while to actually get out of it and understand it. Have you found that to be true, Matt? Even now, you're still learning things?
Every day I'm learning things.
Yeah.
And so, when you talk about Bitcoin Maxi, I'm proud of it because people throw things at me on my social media. "You're just a Bitcoin Maxi." I'm like, "Yeah, what are you? Like a Fiat Maxi or something?"
Yeah.
So one of the other things I've gone down the rabbit hole of is, of course, now I'm calling it dematerializing, right? I'm dematerializing. You've already gone down this journey. I'm selling. So this past week, I've contacted my real estate agent. I'm like, "Sell those commercial properties." I already sold one commercial property earlier this year, allocated to Bitcoin. I had these two more left. I was like, maybe I'm gonna keep it. I'm like, no, I'm out, selling them. And part of the reason of that is because not so much, yes, Bitcoin is a better asset to allocate to, but it's actually even more than that. It's even the government control. Now, I do have it also a residential investment property that is going as well. And it's because the government control these days, I don't know if people know this, these days, you cannot control your own rent. The Labor Party in Victoria is going to start charging people for not being in a property, like just vacant property. They have to rent it out or they get taxed. You've got if you, you can, you have to let a tenant in now if they've got animals. You can't discriminate now against them with animals, right? So all the control is being pulled away from the landlord. I believe that if I want to hold a property and do absolutely nothing with it, I should be free to do that. Yeah. If I just want to park horses in it or something, I don't know. But that's what I think that people should be able to do is absolute freedom over their particular asset that they want to hold. The government seems to be wanting to come in and control the whole narrative. And it's because of their incompetence. Their incompetence is not having enough housing supply. Of course, what is that from? Well, a range of reasons, but mainly I think the immigration, right? This is pumping so many people into this country, they've got to live somewhere. So before I go down that rabbit hole, the other thing I also do is, so I'm selling all the properties to buy Bitcoin. That's the first thing. And the cars, they're all going too. They're on auction right now, right? So the cars are going. Then I've got Bitcoin mining. So as I go down this rabbit hole of Bitcoin, I've moved all my super now into Bitcoin. Then I start looking at what else can I move into Bitcoin? Oh, I can allocate money from Bitcoin mining. And I just love the fact that I'm part of the network, right? It's like an experiment. So I've got Bitcoin dropping into my sovereign wallet, right? Put together by your friends at the Bitcoin Way and my friends too. They're great people there. That was a drop. And so they've set up the node for me. I have my own sovereign set up, and I've got Bitcoin coming in from my miners, which is located in Norway and Ethiopia because the power is so cheap there, dropping into my wallet every single day. So I know that's a lot to take in for some people. You've got all these things happening, but it really is just so, like, I just love it now. Like, I can talk about it all day, but I really think people should start thinking about what is the first thing they should do. You've spoken about this before, Adam. Is the very first thing is just like, just buy some Bitcoin. Even if you're not 100% in, like, put like $50 in, set up a wallet or open up an exchange account. Buy $50, right? Because as you say as well, once you start buying, you take notice. And then you can start reading up on things. I think where people make the mistake is they want to analyze it to the nth degree for like 2 years before they put $50 in, right? Which I think is a big mistake.
Mate, there's a lot there I want to drill into. So certainly probably enough to keep us going for the rest of this pod. So you're talking about mining, nodes, superannuation, property control with government. I just want to double click on that one first because I came to a similar conclusion like you. I had commercial properties all over the Gold Coast, and I can see the writing on the wall, this idea that the government can tax real estate that is sitting inside of their jurisdiction, however they see fit. And if you don't like it, you have to sell it. And that's it. We're seeing now with the government at the moment, they're at their their talk fest. And I know in the media that on the table are proposals around creating a capital gains tax on the principal place of residence, for example. That is actually being discussed right now, meaning that if you sell your principal place of residence, you have to pay CGT. And that, of course, has all kinds of knock-on effects, not the least of which is it locks you into your home. Like you sell your house and then you lose hundreds of thousands in CGT and you have to downgrade to get into the next house. Like, how is that going to work, right? You've seen in Victoria where they've manipulated the price of land tax now so that they've dropped what qualifies in terms of land value. And if you do any kind of work at home, you're getting a bigger land tax bill. You're getting view tax on the Gold Coast. If you're over level four, they charge you 50% more on your rates. So it's just this constant honeypot for the government to invent taxes around, knowing there's nothing you can do because it's stationary, it's in the ground. Whereas if you dematerialize and you don't like the rules, well, you just, move.
Yeah, you forgot the big one too, Adam, which is the unrealized capital gains tax, which I believe is the theft of people's retirement savings on above $3 million.
But
Now,
that's
that
also
is
going to work.
outrageous.
That's going to work. That's also going to apply though to Bitcoiners if you've got Bitcoin
Oh,
in your
totally.
super. So yeah, absolutely. So, but you can change jurisdiction and these different things. So that's really interesting though. So you were talking about a node as well. Now, when I went through the process with the Bitcoin Way, the same thing. I became a node operator. Why don't you just briefly explain what the nodes do so that people are aware? Because a lot of people have this misconception. BlackRock is going to co-opt it and, because they own so much, they control the network. Not true. Why is that not true?
Right. Well, I run my own node, which is basically like having my own sovereign bank. The node is running the Bitcoin blockchain. So I can verify all my transactions in real time on the blockchain. And it's what I call full sovereign control, Adam. Yeah. And so that's basically it. It's really not much more to it than that. It's like a little server that just sits just over here next to my modem and connects to my computer with a bit of a DART or software so I can actually have visual. I like to liken it to if I open up my internet banking with an iBank with ANZ, so I can open up my ANZ account and I can see my accounts. I can do the same thing with my Bitcoin by opening up a particular wallet and I can see how much Bitcoin I've got sitting on the blockchain.
And so it's about this big, guys, just to be really specific. It's a small little thing that you can put in a suitcase. And when you first install it, it backs up the entire Bitcoin blockchain onto your device in your house. So you have a full record of every transaction that's ever happened on the Bitcoin network from day one. It takes about 2 or 3 days to initially grab all that data and put it into your own sovereign node, but it enables you to interact with the blockchain without having to use public nodes, i.e., you're on an exchange, and anybody that wants to see a public node's transactions, they can. But when you're transacting from your own private node, the interaction between your computer and the node is private. So it's very, very interesting. And also, guys, the way the Bitcoin, it's called a consensus network, meaning that the rules can only be changed by the votes of the Bitcoin node operators, not by how much Bitcoin you own, but by voting using your node. So we have this distributed network of people like Matthew, people like me. We've got kids in Afghanistan and, millionaires in New York and all these people all over the world that run Bitcoin nodes. And good luck trying to co-opt all of them to change the rules in your favor. That's what makes it so powerful. It's not like a share. And most people think of the Bitcoin network like the fiat world, where shareholders vote based on how many shares they own. That's not how it works with the Bitcoin network. It is those who participate and operate a node to operate the ledger in a secure way get to vote. So it's very powerful. This is just one of many things that you'll learn in time.
I think even further to that, Adam, is the feeling that you get once you've installed that in your life, right? Once you have
Oh,
your own
100%.
sovereign bank,
Yes.
you almost feel like you're indestructible in a way, right? There's a lot of things coming at you, but it's like a moment of peace, wouldn't you say? How did you feel when you installed yours?
Mate, it was profound. And I rang Tony, who owns the Bitcoin Way, with his partners, Ahmed and the guys. And I said, Tony, like, honestly, mate, I just didn't really get it. I didn't really get what you guys provided. And it's not, I mean, anybody can learn it. You don't need the Bitcoin Way to do it. They just helped us because that's what they do. They help people actually become fully sovereign. I said, dude, you just took me from one level of being a Bitcoiner to a whole different place. Because the thing that he said to me that really got me, Matthew, was like, my life, right? I have gone, I like that term, dematerialized, right? Like
Dematerialized,
I've dematerialized my life. I literally have a couple of suitcases here, and I could leave this place literally tomorrow, where I am now in Cyprus, and be anywhere in the world. And I don't have infrastructure in the ground. I've dematerialized. But what Tony said to me, was like, when we're done with you, when you're operating your own node and you actually understand how to use these decentralized protocols using open source software, where you're not reliant on, there's no single point of failure in your technology setup. You're not reliant on Ledger being in business or the Ledger device gets hacked, or because you're not using anything, you're using, open source everything. Because you'll be able to, if your house blew up, God forbid, and you had to get out of the country within an hour, you could land anywhere in the world, and 3 hours later, you could be back online accessing on the blockchain your Bitcoin without any reliance on any counterparty. And he says, when you actually experience that, you will understand what true freedom is. And I did have that, and it's a profound feeling of freedom, knowing that it's affected me in other ways, Matthew. Like, I'm pretty active on social media, and there's some things happening in the world right now that I feel compelled to speak out about. But I'm doing it into an environment that's hostile to people speaking their truth. And one of the most obvious ways to control somebody, if you're a government, is through money, is by saying, listen, Matthew, you're going to lose your job, or we're going to put you in jail, or we're going to censor your post, or we're going to, like in the UK, in the extreme examples, they're arresting people for, expressing their opinions.
It's
But if you
outrageous.
threaten, there's a doctor in Australia just got disbarred from the medical license for making posts. So they literally took away his livelihood. So
And
money
that's
is
in
a very
Australia.
effective, that's in Australia, for 46 memes that he posted outside of work, things along the lines of there are only two genders, gender affirming medicine in children is dangerous in his opinion. And he's lost his right to practice, not for any malpractice in doing his job, but having an opinion that runs contrary to the government's narrative. And so money is how they controlled him. So, of course, he's now the scapegoat. What are other doctors who might believe this now do? They stay silent
But this
because of
happened through
what?
COVID. This happened through
Money.
COVID, Adam.
Right. And
This exact thing.
this is where that deep conviction, and people look at Bitcoin as like they're crazy, and you're like, what
Actually,
if you didn't have that power over you because you were sovereign individual?
Adam, I'm just thinking back now I just get myself an awakening of like, actually, one of the you opened with, what gave me the conviction and got me down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. Part of it, actually, that I remember now was my distrust with government after COVID. I'd almost forgotten, right? I actually was a person who pretty much thought that government officials were doing wanted to do the right thing by the country, for the most part. After COVID and what the shenanigans that went on through COVID, I was completely blown away. Some of these MPs I knew personally because of some of the interactions I've had in my life through politics. And no one was standing up against this shit. And I think it all came down to they don't want to lose their job, right? It's just easier to be quiet. But this was so fundamental. It was against people's freedom, like their fundamental freedom to choose of something that we now know wasn't completely kosher to be injected into your body. And so that distrust of government also pushed me down into the distrust of government relating to the monetary system.
100% agree with you. And then when I listen to Jack Muller's work as well, and he talks about, sorry, just the screen here. When he talks about, money as an abstract expression of your time, that really gets to me as well, especially as I've gotten older. Like most people listening to this are giving up real time away from the most important people in their life to go and earn money, away from their loved one, their kids, whatever. And then they come home with this token for their time called a dollar, Australian dollar, right? And they pay their bills and they got a little bit of these Australian dollars left over if they're lucky. And then if they put those in the bank, the government behind their back is printing more of the Australian dollars, which means that when they go to Coles and Woolies, the prices are all creeping up. And that Australian dollar that they saved, which is a chunk of their life, has been literally devalued. As the and it's the government doing it. It's literally stealing people's life away from time. So what happens? They have to work longer, they have to work harder, they have to listen to podcasts like this, they have to start Airbnb-ing a bedroom and having strangers come in their house and worrying about GST and repairs and the bandwidth and the cognitive load and the stress that comes into their life, and their marriage starts to be under stress, and then the family unit starts to break down. They have one kid instead of two kids because they can't afford them. It all comes back to this broken money of we can't store our life force, this sacred thing that God or whatever you believe has given you at a spiritual level. We can't store that life force in an effective storage mechanism. And that's where you start crossing over from the number go up mentality of Bitcoin, like watching charts, to the spiritual vote that you make with your life force. And I know
And
it
now you
sounds
know what.
woo-woo.
Yeah, well, you're right. It's totally woo-woo. So people listen to this like these guys are nuts. But now you know why this stuff is not taught in schools. Because if
Yeah.
new people knew,
Well,
it'd
I
be
think it was
probably
Henry Ford. I think you said banking and sausages. It's better that you don't know.
exactly.
Yeah.
Just stay in the matrix.
So tell us about mining, Matthew. So how does Bitcoin mining work? And like what, give us the lowdown. How do we make money mining?
Well, basically, you have to start from scratch. In order to produce Bitcoin, you've got to use Bitcoin mining. And it's basically computers that are solving algorithms or a computation to, and it, and when they win that algorithm or the equation, they get spat out some Bitcoin. At the moment, there's 450 Bitcoin that can be mined per day across the world, right? And of course, as we know, that it will be halved in probably another 2 years, roughly. It'll go down to 225 per day as a part of the Bitcoin halving cycle. Now, people just on that make the mistake that the Bitcoin price must go by halves, right? It's not the Bitcoin price that drops down by half, it's the amount of Bitcoin that can be mined through the protocol. And so,
Called a
but
difficulty
if,
adjustment.
thank you, Adam.
Difficulty adjustment. So the computers that are trying to solve these problems, the problems get twice as hard every 4 years. So it requires twice as much computational power to mine a Bitcoin reward.
Now, as the Bitcoin that can be mined is decreasing, guess what's happening? The value of Bitcoin is increasing, right? So that's the first thing. Now, back to the actual mining itself. I own now 10 Bitcoin mining machines, right? And they range it from different sizes, right? So different price right? Means basically how much computational power each one can do, right? The higher the price, the more Bitcoin it can spit out. I do, though, what's called Bitcoin mining in a pool. So what I'm doing is I've got five Bitcoin miners in Norway and five Bitcoin mining machines in Ethiopia. Can you believe it? Super, super cheap energy in Ethiopia. And what I'm doing is I'm harnessing the power of many mining machines, probably thousands of mining machines within one particular warehouse to get the best bang for your buck with power, but also sharing the workload. And so whatever Bitcoin is produced through that mining pool, I take a share of the equivalent of my mining machine's power. Now, then this happens every single day. Then daily, that Bitcoin is being dropped into my own wallet, right? So you've got upfront a cost for the computer itself, which can range from 2,000 plus. Then you've got an ongoing fee as well. Now, the ongoing fee is actually the energy. So in my case, I pay for the power upfront. Here's though what is so powerful. This is the top secrets coming out now. Virgin Bitcoin, Adam. I didn't come up with that name, by the way. It's Virgin Bitcoin that's being dropped into my wallet. It's coming through untraced, right? It's private Bitcoin. And I'm also getting Bitcoin cheaper than what I would get if I was to buy it through an exchange. Because as you know, if you're buying through an exchange, they need to make money too. So they've got a spread and probably a fee to buy. And so I'm getting it cheaper for that way too. So it's just, in my opinion, I think everybody needs to have Bitcoin mining machines. Even if you just had one and that was just feeding you Bitcoin every single day. Guess what else, Adam? I don't want to, how many people is this going out to? Because we don't want the ATO or anyone to be watching
Yeah.
this.
I think we're at about 32,000 subs at the
Oh
moment on
no.
YouTube.
Oh no, everyone's turning up the volume now. Are you ready? No KYC.
Okay, so that's interesting. So
Know your
KYC.
customer. All right. Now, everybody hates right now when they have to go to a bank or they have to log on for something. They've got to go through this KYC process, which is an international mostly process when you're opening up bank accounts, exchanges, and things like this. It's so the government knows who's doing what. It's another form of government control. You'll also find that it's now moving into the biometric sphere. So when you have to do the whole rotate your face up and down so they can track you. So when you're buying a Bitcoin mining machine, you're simply buying a computer. Someone sends you an invoice, I pay for the computer. And now, because I have my own sovereign wallets, that Bitcoin is now coming from the Bitcoin mining pool itself straight into my sovereign private wallet. Now, I think you're following me on this one, Adam.
I am following you. Yep.
And so even if you have to shell out a few thousand dollars for the Bitcoin mining machine, you pay for some energy along the way. So what? Because we know where Bitcoin is going, and we've also got to think about, and we talked about this earlier, is the government going to try and steal my Bitcoin that is sitting in my company, my personal name, or my SMSF? Now, in Australia, there's 4.2 trillion rough dollars sitting in the superannuation honeypot. Now, can you imagine when people start allocating to Bitcoin? Which they are in droves, by the way. The amount of people that are in my own community is now over 700 people who are all starting to wake up and think, hang on a second, I don't want my money sitting in that superannuation fund getting 8 to 10%. I want to allocate to Bitcoin. Now, can you imagine some of these? I've done the numbers, and you're a big fan of the compound interest calculator, Adam. We know where we got that one from. When you do the numbers, you could be sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars within the next 10 to 20 years, right? Hundreds of millions of dollars, and you wouldn't even have to allocate any more to the superannuation, right? Now, imagine now in 20 years' time what this superannuation pool is now the market cap basically of superannuation Australia. What is that going to be worth? It could be hundreds of trillions. And do you think the government isn't going to want to take a snippet of that? Of course they do. They're going to put their greasy little mitts into your fund and say, you know what? I know we had it above $3 million for you personally, Adam, but now we've decided that you're too rich, right? You've done too well on that investment. The threshold is now down to $500,000. And you know why we're going to do it? It's not because we've got to make the system fairer, right? Because other people didn't allocate to Bitcoin. You did. You've done well. It's not fair for those other people. That is the socialist doctrine.
They just did it in Victoria with land. It's exactly what they've done. They've just changed the rules. They've done it with super. They're doing it with land. They're talking about doing it with the PBR. They just go, have
And
at it.
the thing on that, Adam, which is so disgraceful, which this Labor Party is bringing in right now, is this capital gains tax on the family home. And you know what they're saying, the reason why they're bringing it in? Exactly what I said before, because you've got the haves and the have-nots. And it's not fair for those people who have been in the property market. They might have been in for 20 years. They bought it, many, many years ago. They've done well because the property price went up. Yeah, I would argue not because the value went up, but because the currency debasement actually, right? So they've actually inflated the price, and now they're going to tax you on that, right? It's an absolute. You know what it is, though, Adam? It's a fucking great scam.
It's a Ponzi. I mean, the Australian real estate market is a Ponzi, but like they say, it's only a, I think it was Gay Waterhouse. When somebody wealthy was getting there, paying Gay a fortune to look after their horses, and he looked at the bill one day and rang Gay and said, like, this is such a scam. You know how much you're charging? She goes, it's only a scam if you're not in on it, mate. It's just like
And so, what's
the
the lesson,
Australian property
Adam?
market is, I mean, that's it. It's a Ponzi scheme propped up by, and that the government has become addicted to,
Well, you've got to get in on the scam, like you said. And what we found through this unrealized capital gains tax, the theft of people's retirement savings by Jim and Albo, is that some politicians, bureaucrats, and judges, they're exempt.
Yeah, of course they
We've got to get in on this scam. We've got to get in
are.
on it.
So, Matt, you described a lot of
Judge
things.
Adam.
Look, you described a lot of things, though, that a lot of people who are just learning on the Bitcoin journey that you passed over there that are just so critical. And why I say to people, you must read the Bitcoin Standard, because I want to dig through a few of these with you now. But what Matt described there with Bitcoin mining is why Bitcoin is different to nearly every, in fact, every crypto, is that you can't just get Bitcoin. You can't, if you look at XRP, it was what they call a pre-mine. So they call it pre-mine. It just means no mining. We just made up
We
XRP
made it.
tokens. Ethereum, we made them up, and they are not what we call proof of work systems. So with Bitcoin, if you want to earn a Bitcoin, you have to buy a hardware, you need to install software, and you need to spend real resources on energy to start solving a real computer problem that every 4 years gets twice as hard, meaning that the amount of economic input has to double. So it's called a proof of work network. You can't just get one. You can't just know the guy, right? And you can't politically influence them. You can't politically influence Bitcoin. There's nobody to politically influence. It is
You
a
can't just join the union.
no, it is an unstoppable virus that is hosted by people like Matthew and me and hundreds of thousands of other people around the world, that you can't stop it. Putin said you cannot stop Bitcoin. It's unstoppable, right? And an EMP attack might take out all of Australia, no problem. There's plenty of nodes all around the other parts of the world, right? So as long as one Bitcoin node is operating, the network is still good. So it's proof of work network. And so that's really, really important, guys. You've got this system. Now, imagine if in Australia, for example, the government was actually taking money out of the system, right? What would happen to a fixed supply of goods and services if there was less and less money? What would happen? They would go down in price. It would be deflationary, right? Because there's less money there, and so on. So and to show you, I mean, it's even a sleight of hand, like, when you think about it deeply, and Jeff Booth talks about this a lot. He says, explain to me why technology has advanced so significantly. Nearly every good or service should be cheaper, right? Like with technology, like farming. You apply technology and farming, we can get higher yield. We've got better chemicals. We can more accurately identify where the problems are. We've got drones. We don't need men to go out and drop, in airplanes and do stuff. We can do stuff for way less money. Yet our groceries getting cheaper. No, So despite the deflationary nature of technology, which affects everything, prices are still going up. That's how much money is being printed. It's just so bad. So we have this proof of work system. But this other thing, Matt, what you talked about there is really interesting about no KYC. So Matt's basically saying there's two ways you can get Bitcoin. You can buy it on the open market, and that Bitcoin might have been owned by this wallet address, this wallet address, this wallet address, and it's been tracked all the way through. Or you can go buy some computers from a mining company, like what Matthew's part of. You can pay them a fee for computers, you pay their invoices for the energy as it comes in, and your output is a brand new, never before touched, minted Bitcoin directly into your wallet from the Bitcoin network to your wallet. That's so powerful. And you also said it's wholesale rate, so it's actually cheaper because you are the miner. And so miners around the world are publicly traded companies. So you actually become a miner. So you effectively become a manufacturer of Bitcoin and the best kind of Bitcoin, which is a virgin Bitcoin straight into your wallet that is nobody knows that you have, right?
Well, let me add to this because people are thinking, I don't want to have to do all that, set up no computers and stuff. Adam, this is completely passive, absolutely 100% hands off, right?
You don't have
All
these Bitcoin miners in your garage, right? So how do people do this?
Well, in the beginning, I thought I'm gonna have, because I wanted to be a part of the network. I was like, I'm gonna have them in my, because I had this commercial shed, right, that I was
Right.
using for my cars, and I thought I'll just put a whole stack of miners in there. And then the guy, when I spoke to the team, they said, you can't do that. Well, you can do that, but guess what? The power in Australia is going to be too cost prohibitive. And I went, oh, yeah, that's right. I thought, could I get my own nuclear modular reactor or some mini thing in there? No, you can't do that. Thankfully, they've got a solution for that, which is become part of the mining pool, right? So all I do is buy the computer, they set it up, they maintain it, everything. I just basically go to sleep. And then I've got Bitcoin that's just dropping into my wallet every single day.
But to be really dumb about it, like to ask a dumb question, you just go, who's it through? Like, is there a company and
There's
you
a
just.
company called The Mining Store. Now, The Mining Store is actually based, guess what, in Australia, in Melbourne, right?
You're
So
kidding me.
they're trusted people. They've been in the business. The guy who owns the operation down there is called Will. I'm sure you'll run into him sometime, Adam. He's an absolute legend. He's been in this business for over a decade. Right,
Okay.
he just told me the other day that he had a client who's putting together, it was something like a $10 million deal. Like, this guy's just basically woken up and said, I think he's cottoned on to what I know,
Yes.
right? He's like, I'm putting $10 million into that thing.
Yes. I'd love to be connected to have him on the show to talk about this in detail because effectively what you're saying is Will's company gives you an invoice. So when you say you buy the computer, he just says, okay, Matthew, how much do you want to invest? You invest that amount of money. That money then buys a computer that's sitting in one of these two mining farms in wherever the power is cheapest. And your dividend is Bitcoin paid directly into your Virgin wallet.
I mean, and if you're on the Bitcoin conviction bandwagon, you're thinking, holy smokes,
Yeah.
I'm just getting this virgin Bitcoin to me every single day. How much more of this can I get? Right.
I think the question is like, what's the return on investment in real terms by the time it hits your wallet? Do you have any sort of number on that? Like, if
I
you
find
invest, yeah.
I've done something really sneaky though. This is
I
another
know
hack
it's
for
fiat. I
people.
know it's fiat br brain
No, no,
working here,
no,
but I
no.
just know that's where people are going to start.
Okay. I find it's about equal. It's about even, right? So the cost of electricity is kind of just paying for the initial Bitcoin that I receive. Okay.
Okay.
But that's totally fine. I'm getting virgin Bitcoin, no KYC for basically zero.
Close
It's
enough.
just, as in, I'm just paying for it. I'm paying for it at a flat rate.
So it's
Okay.
kind of like a way to DCA, but you've got an upfront cost to the hardware.
Yes. Yeah, you've got an
Okay.
upfront cost of the hardware and then an ongoing cost in electricity. I have found that because I'm keeping a running spreadsheet of it. It's basically even. So to date, because Bitcoin hasn't moved too much and I've only been doing this for about a year, I haven't seen an explosion yet between my cost base and the value of Bitcoin. Right? It's not big enough yet. Right? It's ahead. If I was to sell all my Bitcoin now, based on the electricity cost, I would be ahead, but not based on the upfront cost of the mining
The
machines,
hardware,
because
yeah.
the hardware would take, they say on average, it lasts about 5 years. They reckon return on investment on average is about 2 to 3 years.
Okay, it's interesting. Yeah, I just say to people, when you think about this, and this is a really key distinction, like if you've got a a network with a monetary policy, a monetary network where the monetary policy is already hard-coded in advance. Like, there's no government sitting down having a talk fest in Bitcoin saying, oh, maybe we should do, you know, no central bank, maybe we should just make the complexity difficulty 25%, or, you know, it's all in the white paper. Every 4 years, the complexity gets twice as difficult. Over 98% of all the Bitcoin in the world that's ever been mined has already been mined, right? But, so that'll ever be mined is already mined. And every 4 years, it gets harder. So think about this for a second, for those of you just listening in and trying to get your head around this. Imagine a monetary policy where every 4 years, the cost of acquiring a Bitcoin doubles for the people who are mining it. What do you think, like, if you think about that and the incentive, what happens at that moment? Well, all of a sudden, if the price is at $100,000 a coin and the miners are mining it with roughly $100,000 of energy to get one, if all of a sudden the bill to get a Bitcoin from an energy point of view doubles because the algorithm is twice as hard now, which is going to happen every 4 years, it is programmatically set in, what do miners do? Right? They stop until prices catch up, right? Because all of a sudden there's going to be less Bitcoin being fed into the network because the incentives aren't there for the miners. So the monetary policy is tightening, not expanding, right? And this is what creates value in the network. And so this is when you start to really deeply understand how genius on so many levels this technology is.
On top of that, the Bitcoin, so for people again listening, you've got your little like mining pools, that's what I'm a part of, and there's probably thousands of people involved in that. Then you've got these massive institutional companies. Marathon, for example, is one of them, which is actually on the stock exchange, and they invest in their mining machine company. And so what are those companies now doing? They're buying or stockpiling. So rather than selling their Bitcoin on the open market, they're stockpiling it. Why? Because the price is going up. They're becoming a treasury themselves within their mining machine company.
Yeah, Marathon is one of the top five Bitcoin treasury holding companies in the world. There's a phenomenal Australian company actually by two brothers out of Sydney called IREN, I-R-E-N, that is definitely worth a look to see what they do as well. Incredible company. I don't know if the guys are billionaires yet, but I'm pretty sure they're well on their way in this Bitcoin mining space. So Matt, it's fascinating having this discussion because a lot of people listening, it's very early and they're just like, I just want to buy Bitcoin and hopefully it performs better than the stock market, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay to start there. But really, what I want people to understand is that the key to Bitcoin is holding it long enough because of the volatility that is in the asset. The volatility is coming out of it a lot now because of the size of the new players and the new floor. Like we saw that massive transaction a couple of weeks ago where somebody cashed in $9 billion of Bitcoin in a single day on a Friday morning at the quietest time with the thinnest liquidity. And it was a slight drawdown, 3%. And then by the end of the day closed up on the back of a $9 billion trade. So the volatility is coming out of it now, but what helps you hold the way, like we always say, anybody who's held Bitcoin for 4 years or more is in the black. Nobody in the history of Bitcoin has held for more than 4 years and has been negative, which is amazing. So the question is, what causes people to be able to hold through it? Because what amateurs do is they buy the top and sell the dip, which you should be doing the opposite, of course, right? And it's that conviction and it's that learning. So if we do enter another bear market, guys, my experience is keep buying and double down on your education. Those are the two things to learn. Because if you'd bought at the bottom where Matt was buying, only 2 years ago, we were at 15,000, 16,000. And today we're at 120 US. So, you know, what is that? A 7X, 8X, something more?
A lot.
Nine or 10X?
Yeah.
And think about that and also super as well is a really interesting one. So if you're interested in getting into super and want to, learn how to do that, talk to Matt and his team, because that's what you guys specialize in, right? In the crypto collective.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's free to get into the Crypto Collective community. They can find it somewhere on the internet. Crypto Collective, put in Matthew Fraser on Google. I'm sure you'll find it. But it's a free community to get into. And we've got a team of people that I've curated behind the scenes that can help people transition from super into traditional super into Bitcoin, because it seems like it's a bit daunting. Once you've got someone who can handhold you through that process, you'll realize it's actually not that difficult. And I think the window, though, Adam, is closing big time. I really do think that people need to wake up really quick and start doing something. The easiest thing for people to do right now, this is why people are thinking about super, is because it's over here somewhere. We can't really touch it anyway. It's very difficult to get people to put allocate to Bitcoin out of their cash flow from their PAYG job. Okay, because they're already struggling, they're trying to pay the bills, etc. But if they've got this superannuation fund to over to the right, it's not doing anything anyway. Hey, I might as well allocate to Bitcoin. Guess what? It turns out that allocating to Bitcoin, in my humble opinion, is the best thing you could possibly do for your financial future anyway.
I agree. I did it myself. I allocated my entire super in 21, and best thing ever. I at the time I didn't know, I didn't do it direct Bitcoin. I did it a Bitcoin treasury company, but I did it because I was full bull on Bitcoin even then.
And let me ask you this, Adam. Was it one of the best financial decisions that you ever made?
It's up 15x, my super.
There you
Like
go.
my super's up 15x since I did it in those 4 years or whatever it's been.
Now, how long would it take someone to do that in traditional world, in trad world? They
Forget
probably couldn't
about
even
it.
do
You can't. I mean, you wouldn't do it in a lifetime, maybe. I don't
it.
know. It's 1500% versus, I think, the long term in Australia is 9.3% for the S&P. So you're talking about 9% versus 1500%. So work that out. 150 years of growth in four.
That's right. I was
It's
listening
crazy.
to Mark Burros recently, and he said basically that Australians are fucked, was basically his words, because most people,
End of
you love Mark,
podcast.
right? Because most people are going to have to work till 80 or 90 years old, right? Based on just leaving their money in the trad super, the traditional super fund. And it's not so much, look, hey, they'll come out, they might have a bit of money. They'll probably have to be on the pension at some stage, right? So if you want to be on the pension, do nothing, okay? But what's happening is we're also living longer. So you're living now to 80 or 90 plus. Super, when it was originally designed, was only meant, you'd live to you're like 65 to maybe 75, 80. Now people are going to be 90 plus, right? They're going to run out of money, right? Because they're now not going to have enough. So first thing is, it's not even returning that well anyway, so you're going to run out because of that. And secondly, you're living longer, so you're going to run out that way as well. So either way, you're double fucked.
In Bitcoin, we say trad super means traditional super, or trad fi is traditional finance. I call it tard fi and tard super. So you need to get out of that. Look, I mean, not financial advice here, guys. I don't say that like lightly, because I really do believe that, getting financial advice, is a very personal thing. It's a very nuanced thing. What people want in life is very different. Their goals are different. Their situations are vastly different. Their incomes, all that sort of stuff. So none of this should be taken as financial advice. What it should be taken as is two guys talking on the internet that are mates and are sharing the way they think about the world. And we probably have, I think, because we're both entrepreneurs, our risk appetite and default setting is higher than most people. But once what I've found on my journey, just my own experience, is when I was early, I heard more experienced Bitcoiners going, actually, the counterparty risk on Bitcoin is it should be the risk off asset rather than the risk on asset that the world sees it as. And I didn't really get that until years later when I started to understand how pristine a collateral it is, how it could be liquidated by a lender if they were going to lend against it, how there's no counter. Like I've said it in last week's pod, I have a big bag of Tesla shares and I constantly worry about Elon's mental state. I worry about him being shot. I worry about the Chinese car manufacturers making better cars than Elon. I worry about his relationship with Donald Trump and whether or not that's going to impact the Tesla share price. With Bitcoin, I don't have any of those counterparty risks or worries. When I had commercial real estate, I'm worried about the tenant. I'm worried about the government taxing me. I'm worried about natural disasters. I'm paying for insurance. I'm worried about somebody slipping over and hurting themselves. I'm worried about a developer buying a block of land nearby and building new versions of what I lease and doing it at a cheaper price than what I've currently signed leases at. There's all these counterparty risks. I'm worried about a governmental change in immigration policy or a change in their monetary policy, both of which would have enormous impacts on the Australian real estate market, right? And the fact I can't move it and I can be taxed. So when you really start to become an investor and you really start to experience different types of assets, and then you look at Bitcoin, you start to go, oh, okay, well, what are the counterparty risks there? Well, there's nobody going to get shot. There's nobody going to be caught offshore in a super yacht with a bag of coke and 15 hookers. Like, that's not going to happen. Not who's in charge. Well, there might be a Bitcoiner, but it's not going to be anybody who has any influence, right? It's a
Well, think,
trustless system.
think about this though, as far as counterparty risk. Just only in the few short weeks ago, Adam, in Australia, there was a managed fund was sort of set up. People thought it was like a superannuation fund. It was really more managed fund. They collapsed. And it was through mismanagement of people's money. And this was money that people had allocated for their retirement for the most part. Now, there was 12,000 people who are now left in the lurch. That was their life savings. So when you talk about counterparty risk, that's a classic example.
And why you need to go the Bitcoin way and learn to self-custody so you don't have someone holding your Bitcoin, like a BlackRock or an ETF or it's up to you, but this is why I do it anyway. In Australia, we've had bank collapses. People forget we had the Advance Bank, that collapsed. So we have them. I don't think we've seen the last of bank collapses at all, right? So anyway, it's all very interesting, guys. Matt, we're going to bring this one to a close. We're up on the hour. We've gone a little over. I appreciate you indulging us with your time because I know you're busy watching YouTube videos and getting
Well,
smarter about Bitcoin
well, it's
all
been a
day.
pleasure to be on the Sat Signal show, that's for sure. And of course, to catch up with you is always enjoyable. And hopefully, just we both added some value to people's lives today, even if it was an awakening of maybe I should think about moving my super across to Bitcoin, even a little bit.
I think so. I think so. Well, guys, if you have, you know what to do. Drop a comment. Matt's going to read them. I'm going to read them. Just stay open, usually I find that people who drop comments that are negative didn't even watch the pod. They watched the headline and read the thumbnail and then just shoot off their mouth. But if you've gotten this far, please drop a comment. Let us know what you'd like to know more about. We appreciate it. We might not answer it directly in the comments, but we'll probably answer it in the coming episode. Matt, all the best. I hope to see you at some of these events around the world in the coming year or so. Get
I
out and
am
you
off
would
to
love
CryptoCon.
Bitcoin. Okay, good. Get
CryptoCon
the
in Sydney. I'm there in November.
nice,
And
nice.
I'm only last night looking at flights. Let me just say that. And they happen to be to Dubai.
Right, amazing. You won't know yourself. I mean, that's going to be your next thing is tax, right? And working that out. Anyway, all good. That's another discussion. Matt, thank you so much for your
Easy.
time. I appreciate it, mate. And we'll see you soon somewhere around the Bitcoin universe.
Thanks, Adam. All the best.
Cheers, man. Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.